This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And very, very good morning to you wherever you are in the world. Oh, my word. I know I always start talking about the weather, but it doesn't matter at the moment where you are in the world. The weather has gone absolute bananas. A couple of weeks ago, it was 3 degrees here. The weekend that's just gone, it was 33 degrees in Johannesburg. Today, it's something like 11 or 12. We've all got jackets and woolly jumpers on again. But the good news for Johannesburg, only if you live in Africa do you understand how much the rain means. And we had really, really good rain with the first high-felt thunderstorm last night. High-felt thunderstorms are wonderful. And we actually, I looked at the rain gauge this morning. We got 22 mils. Can't do that in inches, sorry, or centimetres. But we got 22 mils of rain last night, which is absolutely fantastic because all the jacarandas are flowering. And the city is looking absolutely beautiful. Anyway, that's your weather forecast from Kate this morning. But we've such a special guest this morning. Julien Dutoit and Chris Murray have been chronicling the life and stories of the crew for donkey's years. Donkey being an appropriate word, donkeys are still used in the crew. And they published over the years so many lovely and fascinating books about the crew, all of which, I may say, I have. And one particular series, Crew Roads. We've had Crew Roads. We've had Crew Roads 1 and 2. Now they've just published Crew Roads 4. And it's an absolute treasure trove, packed with photographs, packed with stories. I don't know how they do it, how they unearth this. And, of course, packed with wonderful photographs. So not just the stories, the photographs too. So joining me now is Julie Dutoit. I know she's somewhere deep in the crew, as always. Julie, welcome to you. Where are you at the moment?
Oh, I'm so pleased you asked that question because I'm in such a fascinating place. We are in a place, we're only a few meters away from a feather ostrich palace here just outside Oudtshoorn.
Love those.
They're beautiful. And it's owned by Stan and Bernadette Lipschitz and has such a great story. You know, it's gone back sort of three generations. He's third generation. And, you know, his grandfather bought the farm. He was a watchmaker, Nathan Lipschitz. And he was a watchmaker, and he lent some money to a guy who said, look, I've got a sure thing in the Calcutta sweepstakes, believe it or not. And he lent him some money, and he won. And he won, I don't know how many tens of thousands of pounds or whatever. So he helped Nathan buy this piece of land that we're now on. And eventually they built this. There was already a feather palace on it, built, you know, just before the crash.
Just explain. I know because I've stayed in feather palaces. Just explain what maybe everybody listening doesn't know what a feather palace is.
Yes. Now, what happened was, you know, at the height of the feather boom in the late 1800s and early 1900s. It became quite the fashion to have a very, very fancy kind of house. You know, you would order up all this beautiful stuff from overseas. You would get teak for your verandas. You would get beautiful tiles from Delft for your fireplaces. You would get, what else? You know, all these astounding, you know, everything came from somewhere else except the sandstone that was here. But they're basically full of turrets and strange little follies and so on. They're the most beautiful buildings. I think they were built during the time of Art Nouveau. And Art Nouveau, you know, if anybody tells you what Art Nouveau is, it's best described as stuff that is made, it looks as if it was made by elves. You know, it's just beautiful little touches, you know.
Yeah.
So they've turned this into a boutique hotel. And, you know, then there's two self-catered cottages outside. We're in one of them. And Stan is still a farmer. He's got, I don't know, a couple of thousand, or he's aiming to regrow his flock up to a couple of thousand ostriches after the bird flu thing. You know, farming in the Karoo is never easy. You know, you get black frosts and you get this and you get that. And, you know, your lucerne crop that you thought was just beautiful, or your barley crop, you know, gets nailed. So so it's a full-on working farm here. And then this beautiful boutique hotel, you know, that he and Bernadette run. So, you know, so this is how we get stories. You know, we travel around, we stay with people, we follow them around.
Julie,
and ask questions.
I'm going to take a short commercial break, and then we're coming back to feather palaces and the height of the ostrich feather boom.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back, and I'm talking to Julianne Dutoy, who with her partner Chris Murray writes these wonderful books. And, you know, I don't normally go OTT over books, but they really are such gorgeous books about the Karoo. And I'm talking in particular now about Karoo Roads 4 in faraway places. And Julie, at the moment, as we're talking to her, she's in literally in Oudtshoorn, used to be the feather capital of the world, and the farmers there were so rich in the early 1900s. And I'm told, Julie, that in those days at Christmas, they used to have ostriches pull for the Santa Claus sleigh. But apart from Oudtshoorn, you this book now, you say you've spent 2 years, I quote, occasionally rough travel, gathering material for this book. But why the Karoo in the first place? I know you've been there for so many years now. What lured you and Chris to the Karoo?
Well, Kate, I'm not quite sure. You know, like everybody, we crisscrossed the Karoo at one stage and thought it was a terribly dry and boring place. And then, you know, but as soon as you stop and you listen to people's stories, you start getting drawn in. And it really is a place full of stories. I mean, you know, and even when you go back to a place, there are new things happening. So our intention was always to sort of settle in Cradock and then do some Karoo reportage or stories or whatever journalism, and then also do a bit of Eastern Cape. But we've never gotten really around to the Eastern Cape. Karoo just drew us in. And then, you know, the northern part, so this Karoo Roads 4 in faraway places, I mean, that is exactly where it is. It's in places sort of on the edge of the Karoo, on the northern edge of the Karoo. So we go, obviously, to places like Merveville and Colesberg. So those are a little bit in the middle. But then we head up sort of via Prieska towards the Orange River and all the legends and interesting people that we encountered there. You know, the Orange River, you just think, oh, well, Upington and the Orange River, that's very interesting and so on. But it is the most fascinating river, just from a geological point of view, but then also all the stories attached to it, because it carries diamonds. And when a river carries diamonds, it's going to attract very, very interesting people. And lo, it came to pass. And, you know, this Orange River became the northern boundary, or the northern frontier of an absolute Wild West. In fact, it made the Wild West literally look tame, you know, in terms of horse thieves and cattle rustlers and koi and san and explorers and missionaries and so on. They all sort of, after the 1700s, got drawn to this area, and there was like a mishmash of little wars and skirmishes and theft and whatever going on.
And you see, and we carried on. You know, in the normal course of events, most of us don't come across these stories or even know about these parts of our history. Yes. I mean, we know about the Pilgrim's Rest Gold Rush, and we obviously know about Kimberley. But Orange River, some of your stories there are absolutely amazing. But I also want to ask you, Julie, because I loved your story, not on the Orange River, but the hunt for the elephant engraving. Tell us about that.
Oh, you see now, the way we find stories is usually there are contacts who tell us, oh, there's something interesting happening here or there. So this story happened, it started way back, and it started with a picture that intrigued us. It was a picture of an elephant with her baby surrounded by sort of human sort of stick figures. But its situation was so remarkable because it was on a rock, a very black rock, on top of a small hill, and with absolutely nothing around it. I mean, it just looked so desolate. There wasn't a, I mean, there were obviously plants, but you know, sort of knee-high Karoo plants. And you think, okay, why would somebody have gone to this time and trouble to draw quite painstakingly, etch in rock, an elephant and its baby? You know, what was the significance of that? So we started sort of scratching around, and, you know, you ask a farmer and he says, oh, but I know my neighbor, they found a tusk on the farm. And, you know, and this is somebody who would live, say, in the close to Graaf Reinet or to Cradock. And you think, okay, well, maybe elephants could have come up as far because, you know, they come up the Fish River maybe or the Sundays River. So, you know, that's natural. But then why did they go up so far? And then another friend of ours sent us a picture of a gravestone, and on this gravestone it just said Jakob, what is the name of the farm, Karelse Graf, and then 1750 to 1791. And apparently this guy, everybody says, so it's all corroborated, was trampled to death by an elephant, but also again in the middle of absolute nothing between Carnarvon and Prisco, you know. So again, not elephant country. So you wonder, how the hell did he get trampled to death by an elephant, like, in the middle of nowhere? And
I shouldn't laugh, but it's so bizarre.
No, it is, absolutely. So, you know, then we started scratching around and looking in old history books and asking people, you know, going to Graaf Reinet, for example, and speaking to the woman at the museum, Dr. Anziska Keister, who showed us a beautiful picture of an ivory market in Graaf Reinet. And then, you know, we went to the club, the Graaf Reinet Club, which is, you know, one of those institutions where women were not allowed for a long time. But anyway, now they are. And, you know, you just stand around the bar there, and so-and-so says, oh, yes, no, but I've got a place, what's his name, Biggs? I've got a place on my farm that's called Elephant Wallow. And if you look very carefully, you can see a path, an elephant path up over the Kamdaboo Mountains. And so, you know, we went to Addo, and then we followed the trail sort of upwards. And then eventually we did end up at this place, Springbok Oog, which has got the most remarkable, that rock that I was talking about, this black rock with the elephant mother and baby.
And who engraved it, Julie? Who's the artist?
See, that's also another story. Yeah, well, there could have been a number of artists.
Julie, wait, because I want to hear the full story. Let me take another commercial break, and then you can tell us about who we think the artist is.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And I'm talking to Julie Dutoy, and we're talking about Karoo Roads for in faraway places. And we're talking about this amazing picture of an elephant mother and baby on a black rock in the middle of absolutely nowhere. Who did it, Julie? Did you ever find out?
Well, we found out who the people were that were involved. It was what they used to call the Kum or San Bushmen.
Yes.
The Kum tribe has now disappeared, you know, or dispersed, or their bloodline is dispersed. But they were referred to as the Flat Bushmen because the landscape they lived in was relatively flat. And what happened was a whole bunch of these guys, we only know so much about this because a whole bunch of these guys were arrested for stock theft. This is back in the 1870s. And they were taken to Breakwater Prison in Cape Town. And there they met up with a German philologist, a language specialist, a guy called Dr. Wilhelm Bleek, and he wanted to learn more about the Bushman language. And there were these guys imprisoned, you know, doing nothing. So he started interviewing them, and he asked them about their home. And he and his sister-in-law as well also became involved. So these records are quite famous. They're called the Bleek-Lloyd records.
Yes.
And so basically they would ask these guys whose names were, very complicated, Akunta, Kabo, and Han Kaso, and I'm sure there are all kinds of clicks I'm not doing. But anyway, they then chatted to these guys and told them about their lifestyle and their beliefs and, you know, what where they lived and how they lived. And so in this way, apparently 11,000 pages of testimony were written down between 1870 and 1879, and they remain the only, quote unquote, the only substantial verbatim records in a Bushman language ever written down for posterity in South Africa. So one of them, Kabo, he talked about a place where the, there were elephants and where there were drawings. And so it's thought that they were here, you know.
Yes.
So it's definitely the flat Bushman people who belong to the Klum or Sand people. And the amazing thing is that, you know, you can find then, if you look in the history, the ecological history books, you'll find that this area used to be quite well watered at times. So that's why the elephant must have come down from the Orange River, which was comparatively lush, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't that far away. So they must have come because they're big, they're these beautiful pans, you know, they call them pans or verneerpan, you know, verlichtes and so on. So these areas probably got filled with water and attracted elephants, and that's in turn what probably attracted that guy, Carl, who came to kill the elephants and, who was killed himself.
That's just one of your many stories. By the way, if you'd like to send us a WhatsApp, anything you'd like to ask Julie or me, the number is 061-895-1019. Always have that number handy when you're listening to the program, because so often we get such interesting guests, and I'm sure you want to ask them stuff. 061-895-1019. Now, Julie, when I read the opening of this chapter, I thought, no way. I'm going to read it out. This is the, I'm just finding in my notes here, but the title to this chapter amazed me, and I quote, "The most dynamic, bustling, hustling town in the Karoo-Kalahari crossover zone." And you say it's Upington.
Oh, yes.
The most dynamic, bustling, hustling town. Come on, convince me, although I did read the stories.
Yes, no, listen, you know, the last time we saw Upington was, I don't know, 15 years ago, and it was a sweet little town.
Yes.
You know, it had most of what you needed. Well, let me tell you, thanks to mining just north, you know, iron ore mining and manganese mining up near the Katu area, Upington is bustling, and there are tons of people driving around in buckies and looking sort of like, you know, very busy. The town itself looks quite clean, you know. I mean, we live in Craddock, so sometimes towns are not clean. So we were quite impressed, actually, with how clean and, you know, busy it looked. And they were like, oh, no, the dorp het achteruit gegaan and so on. Yeah, you know, every town in South Africa has that complaint.
But
no, Upington is doing well, and the tourism is bustling, and the river. And, you know, we went out with Saki Spangenberg. You have to go. If you're going up to Upington, you have to go out on this boat. You know, it's a river boat. And it's a Saki Saarki.
Is it like an old paddle steamer?
It's an old paddle steam. Well, it's not quite. Anyway, he built it with his own fair hands. And he's such an interesting chap in himself. You know, so we just like sort of got his story as well. He's saved, I don't know, 40-odd people from drowning, you know, because he's got all the equipment there, and he's the only guy who's like fearless enough to just plunge into a river at the dead of night, you know, in a wild storm to go and save somebody trapped on an island or something in the middle. So, yeah, you know, so we met all these amazing people in Upington. But you know what was very nice was meeting the ladies from Die Gemsbok, you know, the newspaper.
Yes.
All girls, led by a woman who... She's the wife of a guy, Dougie Jones, who used to, he was a legend, you know, he was the editor of the newspaper for decades, and he was like, he took it up to world-class standards almost.
Yeah.
And, yeah, anyway, so we interviewed this whole little female team of journalists and editors and so on, and they also gave us nice insights into what's happening in Upington. And, you know, every time, there's a thing called flood tourism, I would call it. Every time the river rises, it rises far in the east, you know, it rises there in the Drakensberg Mountains and the Malutis and so on. So by the time it slides into Upington, it's huge, but it's not like a big, doesn't come with a big storm or anything. It just sort of, the water just suddenly starts rising. And then the tourists come because then the Ohrabi's Falls gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so you get people coming from all over the country just to look at this enormous volume of water forcing its way through the granite there, you know, just north of Upington. And it is just spectacular. So, you know, there are always people coming to have a look at the river rising. So every time there are, you know, and this giant snake of a river, South Africa's mother river.
Well, we lost you there for a minute, Julie. I've had a SMS from Carol saying that her father's family came from New Bethesda. Love to hear about that. Carol, I must tell you that you must get hold of all the books, Karoo Roads 1, 2, 3, and 4, because Julie and Chris have got the New Bethesda story. Julie, we lost you there for... a moment,
yes.
But we've got you back there. A caller was asking about New Bethesda because her dad's family came from that. So we don't have time today, Carol, to talk about it. But get hold of, if you just go to info@karoospace.co.za, info@karoospace.co.za. You can get hold of Julia or Chris and get all the books. I can really recommend them. But I love the another chapter. I mean, I was in Uppington about 15 years ago, and like you said, it was just a sleepy little dorp, and now you say it's really a bustling little place. But you have another opening of a chapter I love, and I'm going to read it because you need to hear the whole opening. And I quote, "There are mainly two kinds of people who head to Brunflay. The first are on their way to or from the Kalahadi Frontier Park, and the second are birders waiting to tick off the elusive red lark or black-eared sparrow lark. We fell into the tiny third category, those interested in ironstone art, salt, and wolves." Now, who wouldn't want to read the chapter after that opening? Maybe just, I want to come to the wolves especially, but talk us through the ironstone and the salt in Brunflay.
Yeah, you know, look, I mean, you get this amazing ironstone threaded right throughout the Karoo. It's a magmatic rock. It's rose from hundreds of kilometers deep underground, and it rose up 182 million years ago, and it, you know, must have caused quite a lot of chaos then. Anyway, so what we see of it now are these dark, dark boulders sort of that are dotted around the Karoo. Some of them are a bit reddish, but in that particular area, they are almost pitch black, and they are spectacularly beautiful. You know, they just gleam. And these were the favorite sort of canvases of the Bushman people, because, you know, you take any sharp, another piece of stone or, you know, a diamond would certainly be handy. But, you know, if you sort of etch in it, the lighter layer underneath appears, because these rocks are covered in what they call rock or desert varnish. You know, it's just a weathering from the sun and chemicals inside the rock. So, so there are these beautiful ironstone rocks that are just stunning. So in around Brandvlei, they are there in profusion. And we went to a farm called Fars Kans. Oh, but first we stayed at a place in town, Casablanca overnight accommodation. So my husband always promised, one day I'll take you to Casablanca. And anyway, this is...
I love
this
that.
Anyway, so, and they have got these wolves. The woman who started the guest house, Jackie Farrell, she just was fascinated by wolves and she bred them. But then unfortunately, she died during COVID. So her partner, Rui, is carrying on, you know, he's running the guest house and he's running, you know, he sort of feeds the wolves. And
how
all
many
these
wolves are they proper wolves?
No, they're proper wolves. Well, I mean, I'm sure they've got a little bit of dog in them somewhere. I don't think they're purebred, but they're certainly wolf enough that you don't want to put out your hand and pat one, you know, because just in case. He's got a first aid kit there that, you know, he just knows exactly what to do and he takes them to the clinic and so on because people cannot resist. But
what are they doing? Are they in a boma? Are they in an enclosure?
They're sort of in an enclosure, quite a big, spacious one during the day, and there are trees, and there's a couple of things that they lie on or lie underneath and so on. But at night, they come inside into his bedroom. So there are 8 wolves. Can you imagine it? Oh. All around his bed. I mean, it must be the safest place in the whole of Bushmanland because, I mean, who would, you know, go in there?
Oh, my word. 8. I love the idea. I don't even allow my rescue Jack Russell on my bed. The idea of having 8 wolves. And this is why I love the books, because you unearth these amazing stories that nobody else has unearthed. And it seems... Julie, never ending. You know, you think like Crewe Roads 3, that was it. Now you've come up with this amazing new book full of even more stories. And I'm sure there are more stories, aren't there?
Oh, there are always more stories. That's the wonder of it. And, you know, the nice thing is Karoo people love to tell stories.
Yes.
So, I mean, everybody has stories, but the Karoo people like to tell them. And they will happily sit round a braai and tell you all kinds of things that happened with their grandparents and, you know, little dramas on the farm and so on. They've got time to talk and time to tell stories. So, you know, that's, I think, what makes the difference. Everybody has a story, but, you know, are you willing to chat about it? And often they are, you know, we spoke to a farmer who runs a place called Castile, which near Loxton, which literally looks like a castle. It was built like a Bavarian castle by some farmer way back who traveled in Europe and thought, well, this is fancy. I want, like, this thing in the Karoo on my farm. And so got an architect to draw such a thing. Anyway, the people that live there now, somebody, Visa Achman, what's his name? Anyway, so they're saying a lot of city people just sort of sneak onto the property and snap a few pictures and then they dart off because they don't want to invade somebody's privacy. He says, why don't they stay and chat? You know, I'm happy to show them around and tell them about the place. And, you know, they're like,
where exactly is that castle?
You know, if you go to the town of Loxton, which is sort of between Carnarvon and Victoria West, I think.
Yeah.
If you ask anybody there about a farm called Castile, you can go and have a look. You know, he's got a Dutch windmill and everything as well. It's not like a tourist attraction as such at all. You know, it's a working farm. But you know, I'm just using that example as, you know, saying that Karoo people often like, just chat, tell us what you like, where do you come from, what's happening, you know, and then they'll tell you a little bit about their lives and so on. I mean, not obviously every Karoo person, but, you know, they have a greater tendency to say, yeah, let's sit down and have a cup of coffee now, you know. Yeah, let me tell you about the history of this farm. Or
and you know what's so important, Julie, we could listen to you for hours. You've got so many stories. and requests are, the website is... Karoo Spaces info@karoospaces.co.za.
Oh, yes. Karoo Space.
Okay, yeah. Let me repeat that. info@karoospace.co.za. chrisandthembooks.za. That's where you can get hold of Julie or Chris and their books. And you know something, Julie, you haven't mentioned. I'm just going to finish with that. Professor Peter Clayton, who was formerly Deputy VC at Rhodes, he, and I'm quoting, "You are not only entertaining with these stories, but you are playing a wonderful archiving role of preserving these well-chosen and beautifully recorded glimpses into Karoo places and culture." So you're not just entertaining us all, you're doing a very, very important historical job as well. Julie, thanks so much. And please, you and Chris, come on again. And happy travelling.
Thank you so much, Kate. Thanks so much to you and your listeners.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And we could have listened to Julie Dutoy there for hours and hours. And get hold of the books. They're wonderful bedside books because you can pick them up, read a few stories. All the stories are true, by the way, or at least the people telling them believe they're true, although there are some ghost stories too. They're wonderful books to keep by the bed and just pick up and, you know, read a story or two. And you can get the whole lot, 1, 2, 3, and 4, plus lots of other books they've written about the Karoo from info@karoospace.co.za. I've got a couple more books for you. I don't know if you remember Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point. I mean, it sold millions and millions. He came up with this idea of the tipping point. There comes a certain point when things are going to change enormously. Anyway, 25 years after that, and it was a groundbreaking book, he's returned with a brand new book called The Lessons of the Tipping Point. It's called The Revenge of the Tipping Point, but he says it's the lessons. I don't know. I'm going to read you a bit of the blurb before I give you my opinion. This is the blurb from the back of the book. "What does the heartbreaking fate of the cheetah tell us about the way we raise our children? Why do elite universities care so much about sports? What is the magic third, and what does it mean for racial harmony?" In this provocative new work, Malcolm Gladwell returns to the subject of social epidemics and tipping points, this time with the aim of explaining the dark side of contagious phenomena. Okay. Yes and no is my take on that. Look, he tells loads and loads of riveting stories. He tells us about Los Angeles bank robbers. He discovers a forgotten television show from the 70s, which he says has changed our world. But I must say I found it all a bit superficial, because what he does is he makes a point and he names it. He has something called the magic third. Very simplistically, he claims, let's say there's 100 people in the room. He claims if 25 people of them think the same way, then eventually the rest of the 100 will think the same way, which is probably true, but you can't state it as a given truth. I think it was the American humorist James Thurber who said years and years ago that if you tell a person a thing often enough, they come to believe it in the end. Something one of our American presidential candidates does all the while. "I'll make America great again." Lots of people believe him. Maybe he will. Who knows? Anyway, it's a more personal book than The Tipping Point. And if you enjoyed The Tipping Point, it's worth having a look at. It's called Revenge of the Tipping Point. It's front shelves in every bookshop at the moment. And another author who had a runaway bestseller with his first couple of books, Graham Norton. Graham Norton, of course, the host of the very popular chat show on British television. And his new book is called Frankie. It's a nice book. I read it. I often do read books at a single sitting. I read it at a single sitting. I mean, it's not great literature, or it's not going to change your life, whatever, but it's a pleasant read. It's a bit up from Chick Lit. It's certainly not up to David Nichols' One Day or You Are There. What's it about? It's about an old lady in her 70s called Frankie, living all alone in a few crowded rooms, absolutely packed with old furniture and paintings. She's Irish, and she gets a young carer. And Damien's a young guy from Cork who's a very kind and caring carer. He does a caring job because he does care. He doesn't do it for money or whatever. Anyway, he becomes Frankie's carer. And in the months and years that follow, Frankie tells him her story. And it is an amazing story. And of course, the book, has a wonderful twist at the end. So there you are. We've had a lot of books this morning. And finally, now you need a lot of concentration to read this, but it is absolutely brilliant. It won the Booker Prize in 2022 to rave reviews. I hope I'm going to pronounce his name properly. It's Sinhalese, because Sri Lanka used to be called Ceylon. So the people were called, most of the people who lived there were called Sinhalese if they weren't Tamil. His name is Shihan Karunatilaka. And he wrote a book I actually read when I was in Sri Lanka called Chinaman, which was all about cricket. It was very funny. If you love cricket, it's worth picking up his book called Chinaman, all about cricket and googlies. And it's very funny, and also about the corruption, of course, that we know exists in cricket. Now, this book, it is, I could only read it. I think it took me two or three nights to read because there's so much in it and so much to take in. It's so strange. If you're into magic realism, think Marquez, think our own Etienne van Heerden. The Times called it a mashup of Stranger Things and Salman Rushdie. Let me tell you what it's about. And remember, Sri Lanka, you see, it's another war that's gone into memory. Sri Lanka, for I forget how many years, over 20 years, had some of the most devastating civil wars that the world has seen. Do you remember any of them? Did you know it even happened? No, you probably didn't. That's why the doom and gloom merchants, you say to me now, we're on the edge of a third world war. I said, I'm so old. I've been on the edge of so many wars in my lifetime. And thank goodness, none of them have really come to the worst. We haven't had another atomic war, and I don't think we will. But okay, we're going to take a short ad break, and then I'm going to just show you quickly a bit about the book. It's called The Seven Moons of Marley Almeida.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And I'll just finish off by telling you a bit more about this book. Won the Booker Prize in 2022, very readable, because many of those aren't. The Seven Moons of Marley Almeida by Shihan Karunatilaka. And it's set in Colombo, the capital of Sri Lanka, biggest island in the Indian Ocean, by the way. You know, you forget when you're talking about the Indian Ocean, you think of Mauritius, you think of the Seychelles. Sri Lanka is actually the biggest island in the Indian Ocean. Anyway, our hero, anti-hero, Marley Almeida, the guy at the title, he's a war photographer, he's a gambler, he's a closet gay. He's woken up dead in what seems like a celestial visa office. And his body, which is in bits, his dismembered body, is sinking into the Byra Lake, and he has no idea who killed him. So the book is about him trying to find out, as a ghost, what happened. He goes back to he's got seven moons to try and contact the man and woman he loves most. Why does he want to contact them? Because he's got this secret cache of war photographs which could bring down today's government in Sri Lanka, past government, because I said for decades, the most dreadful, dreadful civil war raged in Sri Lanka. But it's a very funny book. It's very comic. It's very macabre. It's very angry. And it will keep you on your toes. And it was a Sunday Times bestseller. But you need to concentrate. And I'm just saying to Senator Betsy, my producer here, she's young, had never heard of the civil wars in Sri Lanka. So many wars have happened and gone into history. And it takes somebody like this author to bring it all alive again, but to do it in a wickedly comic, satirical way. So there we are. Lots for you to read. Hopefully, lots for you to think about. Thanks for the SMSs. Thanks to Craig Guthrie, my sound engineer, who's doing all the right stuff. And I'll talk to you again next week. In the meantime, travel safely. Take care of yourselves and take care of others too.